This podcast was first broadcast on Mix 92.6. Go to mix92.6.com to find more Environment Matters podcasts and, if you enjoy what we do, to find out how you can support the station, which is run entirely by volunteers. I hope you enjoy the podcast. Welcome to Environment Matters with me, Amanda Yorworth. Environment Matters is the show that brings you news on issues of sustainability and the environment from around Hertfordshire and from further afield. Now, last week we heard the dismal news that an intruder had destroyed the eggs belonging to the pair of peregrine falcons that have made St Albans Cathedral roof their home for the last few years. Now, not only is this a frankly horrible thing to do, but it's also illegal as peregrine falcons have been given full legal protection under the Wildlife and Countryside Act 1981. So let's hope that the police bring the person responsible quickly to justice and that those beautiful birds show the amazing resilience that has brought them back from the brink of extinction and perhaps lay more eggs this year to replace those destroyed. Let's keep our fingers crossed. Now, thankfully, there is much more that we can do for local wildlife than just keeping our fingers crossed. Last week, we heard how the Royal Horticultural Society and the Wildlife Trust have come together this year to ask us to be hoverfly heroes and help these masters of disguise find a home in our gardens. Now, if you missed the show, then don't worry, you'll find it on the podcast page of mix92.6.com, and it is well worth a listen. I certainly learnt a lot about these amazing little insects. One of the ways that we're asked to help hoverflies is by making a hoverfly lagoon, by filling a container with dead wood and leaves, and then topping that up with water and popping it in our garden or outdoor space, where it will apparently be enjoyed by hoverfly larvae. But as with so many things, there's lots that we don't know about hoverfly lagoon and how to ensure that they're as effective as possible to help hoverflies. So we're being asked to join a citizen science project to help fill the gaps. With a little more time to spend outside over Easter, I thought that this might be a really worthwhile use of our time and a great thing to do with children as well. I spoke to Dr. Ellen Rotheray, Associate Professor in Ecology at the University of Sussex and part of the Buzz Club Citizen Science Project. And I started by asking her to remind us exactly what hoverflies are.
Hoverflies are flying insects. In the US, they're known as flower flies because they're often seen feeding on flowers. They feed on nectar and pollen. They're brightly coloured, often mistaken as bees. They can be black and yellow, and some actually mimic bees like honeybees. So you might think it's a honeybee when in fact it's a hoverfly. Hoverflies have two pairs of wings, unlike bees have four. Hoverflies are also called hoverflies because they hover. So they've evolved this incredible ability to control their wings in a way that means that they can move very rapidly and precisely. So if you see an insect that is hovering in exactly the same place, not moving around but hovering in one place, that's likely a hoverfly. But they don't have any sting like bees, and they don't have any biting mouth parts, so they don't sting or bite.
Okay, and why precisely are they so important in our gardens and for our food?
Well, I mentioned pollinating. So they are flower visitors. They are known as really important pollinators of wild flowers and crops. So there are over 280 species in the UK, which range in size and length of their mouthparts. So they feed on all sorts of things, mostly open flowers, but also the deeper flowers. So they feed on a huge range of flowers because of those size differences and the time that they're on the wing feeding all these 280 species. Maybe most importantly, after pollination, similar to butterflies, they have a larval stage. And this is distinct from the adult stage. So all the adults feed on flowers generally, on the pollen and nectar, whereas the larval stage of hoverflies feed on a huge variety of different things, depending on the species. So hoverfly larvae occupy different niches. They feed on plants, on roots and stems and bulbs. They're also predators of prey like aphids, so they can control what we might think as pest species in our gardens. And some feed on microbes associated with decaying organic matter. So they fulfill a wide range of ecological roles. And this actually makes them really good indicators for healthy habitats.
Okay. And what would your tips be for how we can best help them in our garden or outdoor space?
Three kind of major things, I'd say. So top of the list is stop using chemicals, or don't consider using chemicals in your garden or whatever green space you have. As far as I'm concerned, I don't think we need to use chemicals at all. I like growing vegetables and things to eat, and I know it can be a problem if a pest comes along, including caterpillars and so on. But grow something else, find different ways of protecting what you're growing, and try and not use chemicals because they're absolutely not necessary and they can have a huge impact on wildlife. And also support organic if you can. The second thing is to have a diversity of habitats in your garden or outdoor space. So bring in as much different kind of habitat as you can to support the different life stages of hoverflies and different insects. So log piles, allow an area to grow wild, grow some flowers, and think about connectivity. And that's in space, so connect your different habitats in some way, but also in time. So you have some flowers flowering across the season, at the beginning of the season, in the summer, and in the autumn as well. And consider water bodies. So if you can, include a water body in your garden. And I'll talk about hoverfly lagoons in a minute as a small water body. The third thing is recording. And so if you can, and if you're keen, get involved in citizen science. So the reason why we know hoverflies and other pollinators are in decline is because of citizen scientists recording, or people who are volunteering and submitting this data. We don't have resources to be able to record insects across some a wide space like the UK. And there's these incredible schemes like the Hoverfly Recording Scheme that run a Facebook page that support people in their ability at identifying things. Some species you can identify with just an image as well, others you can identify to family, and that's still important. And get involved in citizen science projects that are doing different things in terms of monitoring the insect. So that's the other thing you can do.
Okay, well, that brings us fabulously on to your citizen science project that you'd like us to get involved in, which is focused on hoverflies. So which hoverflies are you particularly interested in?
So I mentioned there's hoverflies that feed on vegetation, some that feed on aphids, so they're predators. And there's another group that feed on microbes and decaying organic matter. They're important nutrient recyclers. And it's this group. So they're semi-aquatic species. And at the larval stage, they are almost like mini baleen whales. They filter feed microbes in small water bodies, things in natural situations that would be in tree holes, but also in ditches where organic matter is starting to break down, and that's where these species are. And because of what we've done to our gardens and in urban environments, we've lost the tree holes, we've lost that habitat. So it's about recreating that habitat using artificial means and monitoring the hoverflies that use these kinds of habitats in our gardens.
Fantastic. Well, I had never thought of comparing a hoverfly larvae to a baleen whale. Tremendous. I love that. So what exactly are you hoping to find out?
Well, the Hoverfly Lagoons project run by the Buzz Club has been going since 2016. The data that we're collecting is largely to enable us to create the best, most effective artificial environment for hoverflies. So that's how big does the container need to be? What kind of content attracts the most species? Is location important? Things like that. So that's the kind of questions that we've been asking over the years. Last year and this year, we want to know whether having a water body already present in the garden, mainly a pond essentially, if that helps recruitment in some way, or even if it seems to put off hoverflies using a hoverfly lagoon in a garden. So we need gardens both with and without ponds. So that's crucial. It's not about people with ponds. We need kind of as many people without ponds to take part in the project and create that hoverfly lagoon and monitor the lagoon for hoverflies through the season and let us know how they get on.
Okay, so do I need to know about hoverflies and what hoverfly larvae look like in order to take part in this?
Yeah, but it's relatively easy to identify a hoverfly larvae that use lagoons because they have this long breathing tube. So hoverfly larvae essentially breathe out of their back end. They've got this long and incredible, I think, extendable telescopic breathing tube that they use to breathe while they're hidden underneath the water. And this is the telltale sign. There are other species that have shorter breathing tubes, and they can be mistaken for other insects that use this environment. So this environment, by the way, is really important for many other types of wildlife, not just hoverflies. But we support our volunteers through helping them determine which species they are and whether they are, in fact, hoverflies. So it is an easy, very much citizen science-friendly project to get involved with.
Okay, that's great. So it sounds like it doesn't need prior knowledge, and perhaps we might even learn something from this, which is great to know. So if we decide that we'd like to help your hoverfly research and we'd like to take part, what exactly do you want us to do?
So all the instructions are on our website, on the Buzz Club website. We're associated with Sussex University.
So I have notes that go with the podcast of the show, and I'll make sure that I share a link to your website on there so that people can find it easily.
Nice. So all the instructions are on the website. And once you sign up on to the Hoverfly Lagoons project, you'll be contacted via email and given all the information you need, essentially. And what we ask is that you create your Hoverfly Lagoon as soon as you can, but really you can join the project at any time through the season. And then an email goes out to remind you to go out and survey for hoverfly larvae. You empty your lagoon into a tray and count the number of larvae that you have in your lagoon, and then submit it through a survey. What we also ask you to do is search a tray, which the hoverfly lagoon sits in. The point of this tray is that it captures the pupae. So similar to caterpillars, larvae will pupate, and then the adult emerges from that pupa. But the larvae, it's in water and it needs to exit the water in order to pupate. It needs to pupate in a dry area because that stage, it needs to be able to breathe. So it exits the water and the tray acts as a kind of trap for the pupae. And what we ask our volunteers to try and do is search for these pupae, count them and submit that on our very simple survey form, but also pop them in a jar if they will, and if they're around and able to monitor that jar, and then take a photo and we can identify the species.
Okay, so we'll be looking at a couple of stages in the life cycle of these hoverflies. So lots of interest for you and also lots of opportunities for us as well. So it sounds like we perhaps don't even need to have a garden. This is something that we could just do with an outdoor space. Is that right?
It is. That's actually right. Yeah, we do ask with the this year and last year, we're asking how far do they estimate that there's a water body. But if you're uncertain and it's too far from where you live to know, then it's just there is no water body near me. So that's for people where they might not have a garden themselves, or they might have a courtyard, but they know their neighbour has a pond, which would be important for us to know.
Oh, right. Okay. So we find all the information on your website and then we can get instructions from there. How much time do you think that this would take us? Is it quite a time intensive thing, or what would you estimate?
It doesn't need to be. In some situations, certainly in my garden in some years, I've had 300 to 400 hoverfly larvae in one lagoon. Yeah, absolutely extraordinary. So there is no way that I would sit and count 300 to 400 larvae. In that situation, I would estimate the number. If people are finding it's taking a while to search, then again, just do what you can when you're searching. I mean, it get kids involved as well. Like, my children absolutely love it, just because, I mean, when they were really little, they just liked to count things and be involved in the counting process, never mind anything else, and pointing out slugs and things that weren't the target. So yeah, it shouldn't take long, and really it's down to what people can do.
Okay. Now, as you say, you have been using citizen science to research hoverflies for a few years. In previous years, have people enjoyed this? Have they found it rewarding?
Yeah, they seem to. I think top of the list might be just the realization that hoverflies exist, that this kind of habitat is important and what is in there. So that kind of educational side of things, just that awareness is probably the thing that people are most sort of respond most positively about. The others, we've had some volunteers that have stayed with us for many, many years, so that I've never actually asked them about that sustainability side of things, but really probably getting out there and reconnecting and observing. I mean, just through the process of sitting in the garden and doing this, you suddenly see so much that you wouldn't have ordinarily. People just don't have the time maybe, or, think to go and just observe in the garden, and you maybe see many, many things that you wouldn't ordinarily. One thing about the Hoverfly Lagoons project that I guess making expectation is that Hoverfly Lagoons, so they are kind of organic water bodies. It is a rotting kind of vegetation, is rotting, and it can be quite smelly. I often call them bog of eternal stenches. I mean, it depends what's in there. So if it's a wood sawdust lagoon, I think they actually smell quite nice. But with nettles and grass, yes, they absolutely smell. And sometimes you don't even need to disturb them, and you can get a whiff, and we tend to say, put them in a corner of your garden that you might not disturb them and you might not smell them.
Okay, we are warned, but I am sure that it will be worth it, and it is all in a good cause. Ellie, it sounds like fascinating research. Thank you so much for telling us about that, and perhaps at some point it would be lovely to catch up and hear what it is that you learn from this great citizen science project. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
I was talking there to Dr. Ellen Rotheray, Associate Professor in Ecology at the University of Sussex. And as I said, I'll put the link that you need into the notes that go with the podcast of this show, and that you'll find on the podcast page of mix926.com. Now, last year I took part in the Buzz Club Bee Hotel project, and I have to say that I did learn a lot about bees, and I do hope that someone learnt a lot about bees and why they didn't like my bee hotel. I got a unanimous thumbs down from all local bees and had no takers all summer, but apparently negative results are as good as positive results, and we learn from them too. I'm just hoping that my Hoverfly Lagoon proves more popular, and I am at least looking forward to learning a little bit more about hoverflies and how I can tempt more of them in to help with pollination and pest control in my garden. Now, it's always lovely to hear from you, so if you'd like to get in touch, you can email amanda.yorworth@mix926.com or look for Environment Matters on Mix 92.6 on Facebook and on X. I'm going to be with you at the same time next week with more ways of enjoying nature right now, but until then, thank you for listening.